Well, we are back. I am back with someone who was on the podcast. Man, it feels like forever ago. I think it's been over a year now because I think you posted about it the other day, and it re-sparked us actually having you come back on for the third time, not even the second time, the third time. We did two episodes, I believe. One was regarding the first one was reverse dieting, I think, and the second one was metabolic adaptations. I might have flipped that around, but now we're going to talk about the GFlux, which Brandon also presented on at the PEC, which I was in attendance for, which was awesome because I finally got to meet him in person, which was even better. We were training at the same gym a few days throughout the week. And all you saw, and if you were down there, all you would see is Brandon just getting in a million steps. So we're finally going to get to understand as to why the man has his methods and why the man does a million steps today. So Brandon, welcome back on the show.
Absolutely, Anthony. Thank you for having me, my man. I'm excited to be back on. It has been quite a long time since we've been on a podcast together, but it was incredible getting to meet you and as well as everyone else that I got to meet in person. That was something, and I've shared this with you offline, that I really enjoy the in-person connection of seminars, events, conferences. And that was something we were really missing. So I'm glad that I believe this was your first one. Am I correct?
Yeah, it was actually my first one. So it was pretty cool to actually be able to meet all the people that I've gotten to know, like on Instagram or through podcasting, like in person, which was a treat within itself. And of course, the weather was absolutely, I'll take it now, the Northeast weather
Oh,
in the
100%.
middle of winter.
Yeah, so I'm out in Jersey, so right now it's like 35 or 40 degrees, but then that was in January. I mean, it was below 20, so to be able to go out to Dallas, it was a beautiful event. I'm extremely appreciative for the guys at the PEC and from the Excellence Cartel for bringing me on, and I'm looking forward to the next one. But I'm also looking forward to covering our topic because this is something that I'm truly passionate about. As Anthony mentioned, this is something that I not only promote and utilize within my coaching, but this is something I live myself, and that's a big thing. There's a lot of people that preach and promote a lot of different protocols or practices, but they don't really integrate it and implement it in their day-to-day lifestyle. And the way that I came to Energy Flux is through utilizing it myself because I am someone that has competed 15 times over the years. I am someone that has the goal of maintaining a lean, healthy, muscular physique year-round. And the concept or the application of Energy Flux has been something that has improved not only my body composition, but my metabolic health. So I'm looking forward to being able to discuss it with you in more detail, as well as with your audience.
Definitely. And if you guys haven't gone check out Brandon DeCruz, definitely go check out his page on Instagram. Check out their podcast too. I was also a guest on their podcast not so long ago on the Every Calorie Counts podcast. I discussed my topic was getting into coaching and the real aspects of the first few years of growth within coaching. So definitely go check that out. But let's get to today's topic, man. Honestly, I'm just gonna let you take the floor and then I'll ask questions as necessary. Let's go into what even is. Because I think a lot of people don't actually understand what energy flux is. A lot of people just deal with, hey, their coach gives them a step count and they give them macros. But you're blending those two things together to create leaner physiques and healthier physiques, and you're able to push food higher. So let's get into what even is energy flux to begin with.
Yeah, so honestly, like you mentioned, a lot of people have these different practices or these principles or protocols that they utilize with their clients, for whatever particular goal it is. However, my whole approach is an integrative approach. So I don't see things as these separate entities. I see it's about nutrition, it's about training, it's about cardio, and then it's about physical movement. And it's about blending all these different complexities into a formula that works for that individual. And really, when it comes down to it, the reason why I utilize Energy Flux is because most people who come to me for coaching want a few things. They want to be able to maintain a lean muscular physique where they both look better and feel better, but they also want to be able to maintain this while eating more calories. And here's the thing. The recipe for being able to eat more is to build more muscle first and foremost and to move more. But really, when it comes down to it, 99% of the people that come to me for coaching are already seriously into lifting weights. So the lever that I use to be able to get them eating more is to use Energy Flux as a method of increasing calorie intake while making sure that they stay lean, and we continue to work on building muscle on the back end. But the reason that I don't start with that, so training is always in the equation. So I don't want anyone to hear that I'm utilizing energy flux and it's in place of training. This is in addition to resistance training, but I really try to get it through to both my clients and to other people that resistance training is about an adaptation, and the adaptation is to grow tissue. We shouldn't be trying to chase calorie expenditure, or calorie burning in the gym itself. So that's where we utilize energy flux to increase essentially the physical activity, aspect of someone's lifestyle. So really, you know, let me break down what energy flux is for your audience.
Yep.
Essentially, energy flux refers to our state of energy turnover. And this includes the amount of energy we consume and how many we expend through physical activity, which includes our training and all our direct forms of exercise, but it also includes our daily movement, like our activities of daily living. And the goal when we're trying to maintain a lean, healthy physique, especially after finishing a fat loss phase, is to get into a state of energy balance where both our calorie expenditure and our calorie intake are evenly matched, which is where this concept of energy flux into play comes into place. But here's the thing. We can reach a state of energy balance through a variety of methods. And we can do this whether we utilize a low flux state or a high energy flux approach. But just based off the experiences that I've had with many clients over the years, I've found many advantages to utilizing a high energy flux approach. So let me differentiate, because energy flux is literally, we're just talking about essentially calorie balance between how much we eat and how much we burn.
Yep.
But that doesn't really encapsulate what I'm trying to get across with a high energy flux lifestyle. Because like I said, there's many roads to Rome. So we could utilize, you could be in a low flux state. And in that low flux state, you'd be essentially maintaining your body composition by eating a low amount of calories coupled with low levels of activity. So this is usually where I see most people come to me from, because what do we hear in the fitness industry? Anytime someone wants to lose weight, it's all about a calorie deficit. But what we really hear a lot of people with that have the loudest voices is they say, just eat less and move more, or eat less and exercise more is really what they said. And yes, that's truthful. But it isn't useful, because think about it. How long can we do that for? Yeah, during a fat loss phase or a contest prep, we can do that. But that doesn't really work long term. And so what I find is most people are either coming to me after finishing a fat loss phase, or others are coming to me and they're lifestyle clients, but they're extremely sedentary, whether they realize it or not. And it's really coming from the fact that they work from an office or they work from home. You know, so they spend much of their day sedentary. And even those that are really into fitness, like my physique athletes and my competitors, or even just serious fitness enthusiasts, usually will use that eat less, exercise more approach during a fat loss phase. But by the end, they're metabolically adapted. And we covered that in detail in our last, one of our previous podcasts. But we have to realize that one of the main components of metabolic adaptation is that it causes a substantial reduction to our NEAT levels. It also lowers our energy, because think about it, you're putting less energy in the system, you're getting less energy out. So they're in this state where they're eating less and moving less, whether they realize it or not. So, a lot of people, they don't realize how much of a factor NEAT plays into the amount of calories they burn per day, because a lot of times we only think about the training, or we only think about the nutrition. They're not thinking about, what am I doing the rest of the day? And so, what we have to realize is that NEAT is the component of our total daily energy expenditure that accounts for up to 30% of the calories we burn per day. Now, here's the thing, and we cover this in detail, but for anyone that hasn't listened to that podcast, we actually see in the literature that down regulations in NEAT account for 85 to 90% of the reductions in the calories we burn per day from metabolic adaptation. So this can account for up to a 500 calorie decrease per day in individuals, which drastically lowers their energy expenditure, which is going to make both losing fat and maintaining that fat loss more difficult. So now we're in this situation. Someone comes to me and they say, well, I want to maintain this lean, healthy physique, and they're metabolically adapted, but they want to eat more. So we're at this like conflict, and it's like, well, what do we do now? You're metabolically adapted. I need to feed you more, need to get you in a state of energy balance, but you're also predisposed, or you're primed for fat gain in this post diet window. And that's really why we see such a high recidivism. They up to 95% of diets fail. And it's not that the diet failed, it's that post diet phase failed. So this is where I really like to utilize what I consider a high energy flux lifestyle. And this is where someone would be maintaining their body composition by eating more and being more physically active, which allows them, their calorie intake to be much higher than it would be in the low flux state. So being in a high flux state means that the more energy you put in, the more energy you can get out. So you're able to burn more calories as a result of taking in more calories. Because think about it. everything couples together. So we have to realize that it's not like this. We hear about this energy balance equation, and we think about it. A lot of times people think they're almost like these separate entities. We got calories in, we got calories out. No, they couple together. So when you put less energy into the system, when you eat less, you burn less. We know that through metabolic adaptation. The same thing happens on the upswing. So when you eat more, you burn more, even just through a non-conscious activity. So really, when we're looking at energy flux, the main difference between whether you're in a low flux or a high energy flux state is how active you are and how many calories you burn, you know, you're eating, and how many calories you're burning through activity. So we can maintain weight loss and we can maintain a lean, healthy physique through either method. But like I said, based on my experience with clients and with myself, I lean towards that higher energy flux state so that we can eat more rather than living in this state of chronic restriction and low energy availability. Because honestly, just that's not realistic long-term. Like, how many clients are going to stay in this state where they're constantly not tracking? It's not about that, but it's like they're constantly in this energy deficit and they're always having to be conscious about every little morsel of food that they're putting in their mouth, and they're not able to enjoy themselves or enjoy some calories and actually fuel their training.
Because I think in the end, like, right, like I look at my last off season and I got to the end, right, and I was eating like a ridiculous amount of calories at that point, like 4,000 calories or something like that. But I remember you get to a point though where you do start to shuffle on both ends, right? You get into both ends of the spectrum where you eat so much food that you get tired, and then you eat too little food and you get tired. And I think a lot of people always struggle, and I always end up seeing that, right? Is I end up like dieting some people. And the first thing that you have to coach, right, is to keep that neat exactly where it's at. Because it's like that's the variable that we get to play most with. I think a lot of coaches underestimate what the impact is of that neat and that level that you set it at. Because I'll do the same thing as you, where I'll bring up my neat like along with food for some people, and it keeps them in that high flux state where I'm able to push more food. They're leaner. The blood glucose is in a great range. Like, overall, you're going to see more benefits. They're going to feel great. And I also think like there's health detriments. I forget what study it is. I think Mike Isertel posted it one time, discussing like what happens if NEAT falls below a certain level. You actually get like, it's like negative health benefits to it. So you do want to keep NEAT high as a whole anyway, like just from a general health perspective too.
Yes, we actually see in literature that, so this is pre-COVID. So I'm going to give you some statistics and stuff. Pre-COVID, we saw that, I remember looking to literature, that the average American was doing 5,100 steps per day. Mm-hmm. Now, post-COVID, we haven't had any analyses on this exact number, but we have to imagine it's fallen. And that's 5,100 is sedentary. And what we see is it isn't until you get around 7,500 to 8,000 that you start seeing more metabolic health benefits, better regulation of appetite, better regulation of blood glucose and metabolic markers like triglycerides and things of that sort. So we want to set that as like a minimum threshold. But we also see, and actually there was a recent meta-analysis in 2021 where I believe it was all the way up to 16,000 steps, we saw this linear increase in terms of benefits health-wise. And we also see that for every 1,000 steps, I believe it's like something like a 16% reduction in all cause mortality. So you're increasing your longevity by moving more. And so it's not just, yes, we're going to talk about a lot of the metabolic health benefits. We'll talk about how the benefits that it has towards weight loss maintenance or fat loss maintenance, or even improving aerobic capacity. There's so many things that we can go into in terms of its benefits, but even just from the perspective that Anthony's speaking about, you just want to move more just for general health. So even if you're someone, you're not a bodybuilder, you're not someone that, you know, pushing the upper ends of the spectrum in terms of food where you are compromising insulin sensitivity and you're erring towards that realm of insulin resistance and some metabolic syndrome type markers, you want to do it even if you're just someone that's moderately interested in fitness. You just want to do it just for a general health sake.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's a struggle for a lot of people. I'd rather have people eat more, right? Like you said, in all reality, we see benefits as coaches. We can look at biofeedback markers and we'll go over these too, but we see more benefits of feeding more and making you move more than we do from eating less. Like, it just comes down to a lot of people would much rather people enjoy their carbs, right? like 100%. If we're being honest, people enjoy being able to have a bit more freedom with their food, and they'd rather. And when you start to explain to them these benefits that we're going to go into next, they understand that, hey, I'd rather have to walk a little bit more and enjoy more food.
100%.
So let's dive into the benefits of being in a high flux state. Specifically talking about your weight loss maintenance and your aerobic fitness.
Yeah. So, you know what? I want to hit on one of the things you just mentioned with the nutrition, because, you know, I can go into all these physiological benefits and that's great, but I always say we cannot separate physiology from psychology. They're coupled together. So we need to consider the client's physiology. So what's going on internally with their body systems, with their biology, but we also have to consider their psychological state. And they're, because at the fundamental principle level, we have to realize that adherence and consistency override everything. So if we're not able to get a client to buy into what we're doing or what we're asking them to do, especially from a nutritional perspective, they're going to have no results, because what we have to realize is that we need to be consistent in terms of our intake and getting someone into a state where they can adhere to the nutritional program, because that's what's going to drive their progress. So from a psychological state, we got to realize that when you eat more, so I put you in this high flux state, I'm feeding my clients more. And I'm always telling them we're fueling life, we're fueling activity, we're fueling your training, but also we're getting you out of this restriction-based mindset where you can't eat anything, or you have to stay at this low amount of calories, or you have to restrict your carbs. I'm trying to get you into a state of abundance. And what I mean by that is a state of abundance energy-wise. So more energy in the system, you're putting in more calories, you have more daily energy. So you're going to be able to be more active and you're going to be less likely to not want to hit your steps. But also just from a nutritional perspective, being in a high flux state allows you to sustain a higher calorie intake, which is especially important in terms of maintaining that adherence. And it also allows you for greater flexibility with your diet. So a lot of times when someone comes to me, and they have just finished a fat loss diet and they've done the traditional approach of eat less, exercise more, they're in a state where first they're hitting their training because they're going into it depleted, they're flat, they're getting no pumps, and they also just feel drained, not only in the gym, but outside the gym. So their overall quality of life has been lowered and they feel like they can't, you know, enjoy themselves, both in terms of food, but also in terms of their other activities that they generally have enjoyed in the past, like their training. So really, I try to get them into this mindset where we're going to fuel your activity, both in terms of your daily activities, but also your training. So we're going to get the benefits from both, but we're going to be able to, you know, there's a lot of times that I get someone in this higher flux state, and I'm able to have them maintain, you know, their current state of body composition, their body fat levels on 800 to 1,000 calories more. Now think about how much that is to play with. Like, that's so much greater flexibility with their diet. And I have so many, especially women, I really have to get them into this mindset of abundance, because they come to me and they've been through these cyclical patterns of yo-yo dieting. They're constantly in this deficit. Their mindset is restricted as well as their body. So I'm dealing with physiology, but I'm also dealing with psychology. I'm trying to restore hormones and gut health and all these other aspects, but I'm also trying to re-facilitate a better mental state and a better relationship with food. And really, we can't build a better relationship with food in a restricted state. If you're in a deficit, very few people, it's going to be the outliers of the equation that are really going to build a better relationship with food when they're realizing that they're constantly taking away from it. So that increased flexibility really helps. And then due to being able to eat more, you're more likely to hit all your micronutrient needs as a result of being able to have a wider spectrum of food. So I really drive nutrient density and nutrient variety with my clients, because a lot of times I have people come to me out of this fat loss phase, or even those in an off season, and they're just, because they're so inactive, they're not really at what I would consider like a building phase or an off season type of surplus. They're in like very low energy availability. They're not eating a lot, but they're still gaining weight. They're gaining body fat. So I have these nutrition gaps that I need to fill in with that client. So I'm able to do that by increasing both food flexibility as well as food variety. And then also, you know, eating more and then moving more also makes you more sensitive to your satiety signals and helps you to regulate your appetite and manage hunger better, which thus leads to better adherence. So there's these multi-pronged effects. I'm giving you more food, so you're more satiated, you're less hungry, but you're also moving more, so you're getting a better fullness response, especially post-meal, to those meals that you're having. So you're more likely to stay on track and really hit a well-rounded, nutrient-dense diet. And then also, from, you know, a movement and a food perspective, we're improving someone's metabolic flexibility, which is their ability to switch between fuel sources. So when they're doing low intensity activities like their walks or like their cardio, they're better fat burners, essentially. That's really what it is. They're oxidizing fat through aerobic metabolism, because that's what we do when we're at low levels of intensity. But at the same time, I'm able to put off a ton of carbs into the system. So when we're doing a higher intensity activity like weight training that relies off anaerobic glycolysis, so it burns up glucose or glycogen in the process, I'm able to fuel that better. So they're getting better pumps, they're having better workout sessions, they're feeling more fueled, they're recovering better. And from like a fat loss maintenance perspective, we see that even from, you know, data from like the National Weight Control Registry, that one of the most common traits among those who are successful in not only losing weight, but keeping it off, is that they engage in very high amounts of physical activity daily and often average around 2,500 calories burned through physical activity per week. And when I say by physical activity, we're really talking steps, because that's what they're looking at. In the National Weight Control Registry, the average person that has lost weight, the National Weight Control Registry is essentially a database that looks at people that have lost 30 or more pounds and have kept it off for at least a year, which if anyone out there has never looked into the weight loss literature, that is a rarity, because 95% of diets, people will lose weight. So 6 out of 7 people will lose weight throughout the course of their lifetime. But within the first year, 80% of them gain back all the weight that they lost or more. Within 2 years, that statistic's up to 85%. And within 3 years, we see 95% of people that diet, they regain all the weight or even more than they lost in the process of dieting. So the fact that these people have been able to keep it off for a year and a substantial amount of weight, 30 pounds, is amazing. But we also see that they average 12,000 steps per day plus. So this is just proof in the pudding. Like, this is what people are doing in the trenches, in the real world, and the benefits that they're getting from it. Then from like a training aspect, we're seeing that, you know, you're putting more energy into the system. Think about it. You're fueling that training. So we're going to see improvements in training performance, training intensity, because you're going to have more fuel available to power that output. We see that recovery is enhanced due to this higher calorie intake, as well as the increased blood flow, because you're moving more. So you're going out for walks, post-meal walks, or you're getting in some low intensity activity that's just driving nutrients into your muscle cells and really helping to facilitate lower levels of DOMS. It's helping to flush out some of that that soreness and things of that sort. And then from like a metabolic health perspective, which is something that I'm really big on, because, you know, I'm big into the integrative side of things and really incorporating that into my coaching, because I always say, coaching, quality coaching, let me differentiate, not just coaching, quality coaching is more than there's just the X's and O's of nutrition and training. It's not just about, you know, macros and calories and sets and reps. It's about prioritizing and optimizing a client's body composition along with their health, because that's how we guarantee long-term results. So from a metabolic health perspective, we see that an increase in activity will increase someone's insulin sensitivity. They're going to have better partitioning of the nutrients. So you're not only able to eat more, but you're handling those nutrients better, because when you go through the act of any physical activity, honestly, anytime that you're contracting muscles, which happens even when you're walking, you're upregulating GLUT4 translocation, meaning that you're able to partition nutrients into muscle without the presence of insulin. So now you're lowering insulin levels, you're automatically becoming more insulin sensitive. So that's going to lead to better blood sugar management. And I see this personally because I track a lot of biomarkers, as you know, and I'm always looking at blood glucose, whether it be fasted or postprandially. I'm having clients on blood work look at HbA1c and fasting insulin, and I'm able to track these parameters and see those benefits. And then also just from like a conditioning aspect, we always think about conditioning in terms of what we look like or what we're able to do in the gym. But what we have to realize is that resistance training is an anaerobic activity. It requires carbohydrates, but the rest in between sets, that's all on aerobic conditioning. We're utilizing fat. So if you're not aerobically conditioned, if you have bad cardiovascular fitness and health, you're not going to be able to recover as well. And so that's also going to have detriments to your blood pressure, as well as your resting heart rate. So by increasing your aerobic fitness through steps or through higher levels of NEAT, you're going to improve your blood pressure. You're going to improve your resting heart rate and your aerobic capacity.
Yeah. And I think one that we even got to look at, right, is you mentioned the psychological part. And this is where more food always plays a factor in a lot of things, is like the stress component, right? And we're looking at, and we're both, I would consider us the quality coaches that you're going for here, in terms of we look at more depth rather than just macros and training programs. When you look at like cortisol, right? Like you're able to push more if you're able to push more carbs, well, insulin is the antagonist to cortisol. So it's going to help lower. This is often why when we get clients and we're able to feed them more from the beginning, we typically see that stress fall off. That's typically what that initial weight drop usually is your metabolic, your metabolism is so adapted that you're feeding it more, which ends up lowering the stress. So being able to like bring all these back together, it goes through all your systems within the body to make it work more optimally, as Brandon said.
Absolutely. No, even from like, say, let's look at like a stress management side from the autonomic nervous system. So we're looking at the sympathetic system, which is your fight or flight, and then your parasympathetic, which is your rest and digest. Well, they're stimulated by different activities. So training is actually an inherently catabolic activity. It turns on the sympathetic nervous system because we're trying to liberate energy. So if you don't have enough fuel, if you're in a deficit, your body's going to be more likely to go through gluconeogenesis, or the breaking down of amino acids to provide substrate or fuel for the body. But with that, you're going to have higher cortisol levels. We see massive cortisol elevations during training, which can really be, this is one area that I really like to push calories is in the intra-workout window, because we see that we can have substantial reductions in cortisol production by utilizing intra-workout carbs. There's actually a study by Tarpenning in 2000 where he looked at utilizing intra-workout carbohydrates, and I believe it was a dose of 50 grams of high molecular weight carbohydrates. So that could be like a dextrose or a highly branched cyclic dextrin. And they did a course where they compared groups that utilized the 50 grams of carbohydrates intra-workout with a group that didn't during the same training bout. And what they did was they did a washout period so that they didn't see newbie gains. So I believe the first 6 weeks of the study, they just trained normally. And they had the, and the reason I say this is that they were well-trained individuals, but they essentially made sure that they weren't getting just neural adaptations, because whenever you start a new and novel training program, you're going to be seeing increases in strength. You're going to see increases, you know, week to week in terms of reps. When you get neurally adapted, so you're neurologically efficient with those movements, you become acclimated to them. That's where we see the real progress, because if you start seeing you're 6 weeks into a movement and you're still making progress, that's more of an indication that we're accruing muscle tissue. So they did this 6 week washout period, and then they put, I believe it was a 10 week study after that. They put subjects into two groups, and they looked at, you know, what were the changes in muscle mass between the group that was utilizing intra-workout carbs and the group that wasn't. Now, here's the thing. In the entire study, everything was calorie equated. It was only the timing that was different. So it wasn't like the group that was utilizing intra-workout carbs had 50 extra grams of carbs, so 200 extra calories. They made up for that, those 50 grams of carbs in another meal with the group that was the control group. However, what they saw was they looked at the correlations between cortisol suppression and muscle mass. And what they saw was, I believe it was like, they accounted for like 75% of the increase in the muscle were due to those that had more suppressed cortisol levels. So essentially what that means is those that were able to take in carbohydrates during the training session got better muscular adaptations as a result. So this is just another thing. When people come to me and they're in this, you know, restricted state, they can't afford liquid calories. Let's think about it. Like if you're really in this low energy availability state where you're in a deficit or you're underfeeding yourself, the last thing you're going to want to do is utilize powdered carbs. You're going to want whole foods. So you're not going to utilize that intra-workout. You're not going to get those benefits. But also from not only a cortisol management perspective, intra-workout, we also know that walking. So what this is the number one activity that I use to increase energy flux. It's the only physical activity that promotes parasympathetic nervous system activation. So it's the only type of activity that doesn't increase cortisol production. It actually lowers it. So it gets you in a parasympathetic state. So you're better able to manage stress, especially what I really, advise my clients and guide them to do is do it outside. You're going to have multi-pronged benefits from that. Start your day with a morning walk. You're going to be able to get light shining into the back of your eyes, into the photons of your eyes. And that's going to set up your sleep wake cycle. So now that we've benefited your circadian rhythm, we've also gotten you some sun exposure. So you're getting vitamin D synthesis. You're also in nature. So there's a greenhouse effect that has been shown. Walks in nature, both in walking groups, as well as individuals just walking out in nature, has been shown to lower the likelihood as well as the symptoms of depression and anxiety. So there's all these benefits, both from your physiology, but also from your psychology.
Yeah, definitely. And in terms of that, I mean, we went over this before, so you gladly can go into this, go into kind of like some of the studies that you have based upon high flux, because I know you're a study guy and I know a lot of people who are listening to this are always probably looking at you in terms of studies. So do you have a few studies that you can go through maybe that go through the benefits of the high flux state? I mean, if it's not already an approach that people listening to this podcast, like 30 minutes in, should already take, you know, there has to be data behind this too, right? To support 100%. Points that you're so making.
I am big into both the research, but also the application. Yep. So I believe coaching is a relationship. When we talk evidence-based coaching or evidence-based practice, a lot of people, they only go to one side of the equation. So what we have to realize, first, let me define evidence-based practice, because a lot of people think it's just pulling up PubMed studies. It isn't. That's incorrect. It's a three-pronged approach. So what evidence-based practice was meant to do or meant to be, if we look at evidence-based medicine, which is where we took that from, that concept, it was a three-pronged approach. It included the research, the most up-to-date evidence, you know, the body of evidence that we have in the research. It was the experience of the practitioner. So at that time, it was medical practitioners, but in our case, it's coaches. And then it's the experiences, it's the preferences, and it's the responses of the individual client sitting in front of you. So I always think about it as a triangle for evidence-based practice. And that's really where I don't say I'm evidence-based, I'm evidence-informed. So what I do is I take evidence and utilize, you know, honestly, within the terms of energy flux, this was an approach I was already utilizing. I was utilizing step trackers, and I was coming to these conclusions on my own because I was seeing it with clients, and I had so many case studies. I worked with hundreds of people that I was seeing these benefits. I just didn't have the research behind it at the time. So Anthony, when I first started doing this was like 2016, 2017. It was really when Fitbit was getting very popular at the time. So I was tracking it myself. And what ended up happening was I always kept a very lean physique. I've been very dialed in with my nutrition. I've competed 15 times. I've done over 100 photo shoots. So I've been very active. And also, this is my career. So I see this as I'm a walking testament of the lifestyle and the principles that I preach. So I really believe that as a coach, you need to walk the walk. If you're prepping competitors, you need to have been dug out before. Because if you expect someone to be able to go into the trenches and really get lean, you have to understand their experience. So I always tell my clients, whether it's a competitor or lifestyle client, I will never ask you to do something that I have not done or that I would not be willing to do. So that's the same thing. I had applied this to myself initially. And during my earlier preps, I was utilizing higher step counts. And now what ended up happening was, at the time I was working for a nutrition company and I changed positions. And I ended up in a corporate office. And so I went from walking, you know, hitting like 12,000 to 15,000 steps per day, to all of a sudden I was hitting like 6,000. Now I didn't, you know, I wore an activity tracker, but I really wasn't thinking about it because like many else people out there, you know, we always think about, oh, we're physically active because we go to the gym. I trained, you know, 90 minutes, 5 to 6 days a week. I'm good. Here's the thing. That's not how it is. We actually see in research that just recently came out in 2019, 2020, that both physical activity through your daily movement and then also resistance training or intentional exercise sends two different signals and two different adaptations. And what can end up happening is you can almost block some of the benefits from your resistance training by being physically inactive. So what they do is they issue what are called metabolic challenge tests. And so what they'll do is they'll take physically active individuals and they'll put them into office work for a period of 4 days. And what they'll do is at the end of the day, so they'll work their 8 or 12 hour day, and they'll be seated like a normal, you know, office worker would be, same type of thing. And then at the end of the day, they have them do an hour of intense exercise. So in your mind, you think, all right, well, they're still going to have metabolic benefits from this. When they test two groups against each other at the same, or they do a crossover trial, meaning that participants go through both arm of the study. They do 4 days of being sedentary and then 4 days of their normal activity levels with the hour of intense exercise at night. And then they do a challenge test where they give them a high carb and high fat test the next morning after their last bout of exercise. What they noticed was that when they were in the sedentary condition, so after just 4 days of being sedentary, they saw that they were unable to clear both the blood glucose and the fatty acids out of their blood. So they were basically like insulin resistant, and their blood work looked like that of a type 2 diabetic as compared to when they were active, just physically active throughout the day. They weren't doing intentional exercise. They would do their hour at night. So they still did their exercise, but they were both physically active and training. And that's where we really see the metabolic benefits of, you know, exercise. So that's why I always say, we're not looking at these things as separate entities. We have our resistance training, we have our cardio, we have our physical activity, we have our nutrition. These are all fundamental key components of a well-organized and periodized program. So as far as like research goes, I think the one that really stands out to me and really gets a lot of shock when I go over it is, this is actually my favorite study. So I know it off the top of my head, but it's by Bassett et al. In 2004, and it's on the Amish. And I know you've heard me talk about this, but for anyone out there that doesn't know the Amish are essentially, you know, these manual laborers. That's really what they are. They're living in an agricultural community. They don't do the same things that many of us do. They don't go shopping at Walmart. They pick all their own food, or they grow all their own food. They don't use cars or automobiles. They ride by horse and buggy, or they walk everywhere. So they're really active, and they choose not to live in modern society nor use any of like the modern conveniences that it brings with it. So what they did was Bassett et al. Went into their community and they looked at the relationship between their activity levels and their metabolic health, because they wanted to see what are the benefits of these people. Now, let me make a caveat here. These are people, they don't track their calories. They're not looking at their nutritional intake. They don't do any intentional exercise. And honestly, if you ever go to an Amish community, I know that Anthony's from Pennsylvania, so I'm sure you've been out to Lancaster.
Yep.
Am I right?
Yep.
All right. So 100%. I've been there. So I've seen these people in the flesh. They're completely covered, whether it's winter or it's summer. So they're not doing this for, you know, they're not really health, or they're not body conscious, to say the least. But essentially what they did was they did a 50-50 split. They looked at both the males and the females in the groups, and they provided them with both pedometers and activity questionnaire. And so what we have to realize is that most of the members of the Amish community are manual laborers. So the males do things like they're farmers, they're construction workers and builders, or they're woodworkers. And the women, most of them are homemakers, but they do a lot of things by hand. So they'll help out, they'll pick out things in the crops and things of that sort. So both of them are really active. And then what they did was they analyzed and observed them through 7 days. Monday through Saturday, they saw that the guys averaged around 20,000 steps per day, while the females averaged 15,000 steps per day. And then even on their one day off, so on Sunday, they take off, they just go to church, they still average 10,000 steps per day. So whether they're manually working or they're off from work, they're still super active. They're walking to each other's houses, they're engaging in community activities. Like, even from an entertainment perspective, you know, in the study, I remember it saying that they didn't watch TV. Like, they did communal, like, things in the community. They played games with each other. They were super active. And they're really removed from a lot of the modern conveniences that really cause sedentariness in our society. But also, with those same conveniences, they cause inactivity as well as metabolic health issues. And that's why we see that the average American is gaining 1 to 2 pounds per year. So when they looked at the body composition results of these individuals, so they went and they DEXA'd them, and the males, this is incredible. The males were at an average of 9.4% body fat with 0% prevalence of obesity. Now, keep in mind, in the States, we're at a 50 to 70% prevalence of obesity. So like, this is a massive difference. And then the females, even though they weren't as physically active, they were at 25% body fat and 9% prevalence of obesity. Now realize they are living in, you know, so we could look at this, and a lot of people would come back to me on this and they'd say, well, maybe they're just under eating. Well, here's the thing. They looked at their actual energy intake. So they monitored them. And so they are not tracking. The Amish do not track their energy intake whatsoever. They don't know what MyFitnessPal is. They don't have smartphones and things of that sort. But the males were at around 3,600 calories per day, while the women were eating over 2,000 calories per day. And they even monitored the types of foods that they had. And they saw that their diet was both high in fat and refined sugar. So it's not like they're watching their diets to stay this lean and to stay shredded, but they still maintain good metabolic health due to being in a state of high energy flux. So really what this shows is that the high levels of activity, remember, there's no intentional exercise, there's no diet interventions. This is regular physical activity all the time and staying very active led to not only better, you know, low body fat percentages, but a better metabolic profile overall. So it's amazing, because these aren't individuals that are purposely trying to do this. They consider this part of their lifestyle. And that's why I always say, this is a high energy flux lifestyle. This isn't a protocol that I utilize with clients. It's not a one size fits all approach. It's individualized to the client themselves, their lifestyle, their goals, their needs, but also we're eating more and we're moving more. And that's the same example, because when we look at the Amish, the average guy is like 160 or 170 pounds eating 3,600 calories per day and shredded. The average female is like 120 or 130 pounds and they're eating over 2,000 calories per day. And I have many physique competitors that come to me that are females that they will scoff at 2,000 calories per day. They don't want to go anywhere near that. And these are people that they eat that way. They stay in great metabolic health. They stay in great shape. And it just shows some of the amazing benefits of living a high energy flux lifestyle.
Now, you discussed their amount of steps, right? And you discussed that men probably walked around 20,000. You said women roughly around 15.
I think on average, when they really did the compilation, it was like guys averaged 17 to 18,000 per day and women averaged 12 to 13 when they did the 7 day average. But Monday through Saturday, when they're working, yeah, the averages are higher.
Yeah. So when you're looking at that, have you seen, before we get into the application of it, because I do want to touch on how can people apply this. Have you seen an actual negative correlation though, between, is there a point to where you may have seen anecdotally too many steps to the point? Because for a lot of people, getting in that many steps is not part, like, we're trying to make it a lifestyle change, right? Absolutely. 100%. Like, that's what you just said. Is there a point to where too many steps is too many steps? Because okay, so, I feel like,
so yeah, let's hit on this. Let me make this very clear. Mm-hmm. What the Amish do is not the requirement of what I said to my clients. And here's another thing. I do want to make this clear. Not only do they not, you know, track their intake in terms of calories, but they're also not doing any intentional exercise. So we have to consider that into your energy expenditure. If you're going to the gym, if you're active, obviously you're not, you don't have all day to be moving and things of that sort. So really what energy flux is, and I really try to make this very apparent, it's not a one size fits all approach. It isn't that I give you a step prescription. Yes, I do utilize NEAT to get my clients into a state of high energy flux. But the thing is, energy flux is about how many steps are you taking currently and how many do we have to titrate up? And it's all about a titration method. So just like when we spoke about, we did a full in-depth podcast on reverse dieting. I told you I couldn't give you a calorie prescription because it's based on the individual and there's so much context behind it. When I have a client come to me, I'm having them do at least a 7-day analysis. What are your average steps? Now, some people come to me and they're office workers. They're getting 3,000 steps per day. And they're amazed because they've never tracked their steps before. So they don't realize how sedentary they are. So the first thing is that's an awareness tool. Hey, we've brought, you know, awareness to your level of sedentariness. You thought you were making up for it by training, but obviously you're not moving that much. And there's so many other benefits that we can just get by getting you up to that 75 to 8,000 steps per day. So I start with titrating and we just do it in a methodological approach, meaning strategically, I'll raise calories. First, I'm putting more energy into the system because if someone comes to me, they're metabolically adapted. I can't just pile a bunch of movement on them because they don't have the energy first and foremost. And here's the biggest thing with energy flux. And this is where I've seen other people post about energy flux and they're utilizing it as like a fat loss approach the last couple of weeks. And they're cranking their clients' steps through the roof with no food. And here's the thing. If you're metabolically adapted and you're ready deep into the diet or you just finished a diet and now you haven't increased food yet and you're trying to increase energy expenditure, you're going to be capped. And the reason for that is because metabolic adaptation not only lowers your NEAT, so you're going to be more likely to compensate the rest of the day. So maybe you do more cardio to get your steps in. So you do intentional cardio, which is why I try to delineate it from cardio, because when I talk about training, so whether it be resistance training or cardiovascular training, that is for an adaptation. When I have someone do cardiovascular training, that's for the aerobic benefits of cardiovascular training. It's at a higher heart rate. It's really trying to get a sweat going. Steps are just, that's casual, man. It's just movement. And steps can be, hey, go to the grocery store more often or play with your kids or go out in the garden. You know, steps are just the easiest way to track things. And when we get more into the application, I'll talk about how I do it. But energy flux is about increasing where you're at currently. So I meet my clients where they're at and we slowly walk them up, both in terms of food and in terms of steps, but it's always hand in hand. So it's never, I'm always putting energy into the system first, seeing how they respond, and then monitoring and adjusting things as we go. Because remember, we're trying to maintain a lean, healthy physique. So it's not like I'm piling a bunch of calories in and a bunch of work, because that's not going to allow me to get an objective viewpoint of how their body's responding. And everyone's an individual outlier. So we even have, say, I really like looking into overfeeding research. And so we have studies by like Levine et al. And this is something I didn't even cover in our in my presentation, but this is something I'm just generally interested in. And he's a big NEAT researcher. So he looks at NEAT as well as overfeeding studies. So what he did was he put young guys into an 8-week overfeeding study where they fed them 1,000 extra calories per day for 8 straight weeks. And what he saw was that the biggest, he wanted to see essentially the effects of overfeeding in terms of body fat accrual. How much body fat would someone gain in a 8-week period of overfeeding by 1,000 calories? Now think about that. In 1 week of overfeeding by 1,000 calories, you would expect, because that's a 7,000 calorie surplus, that someone would gain 2 pounds of fat. That just from a weight perspective, energy balance, if everything else stayed the same, it'd be 2 pounds per week extrapolated over 8 weeks, it'd be 16 pounds. Now what he saw was that a lot of people, they didn't see that response. Everyone was individual, but one person, they only gained 0.8 pounds. So instead of gaining 16 pounds, they only gained 0.8 pounds. They upregulated their energy expenditure in terms of their NEAT by 800 calories. Now, on the other side, there was one poor bastard that downregulated his energy expenditure. So he gained more than expected. So he had more calories in the system. He ended up moving less. So he was that person that you were speaking about, like that he was eating so much that he was lethargic. But ultimately what they saw was the average person gained between like 4 and 9 pounds. So it was not what they expected. And what they saw was the biggest difference in that was the variations and variability between levels of NEAT through the, you know, but what they saw was on average, the majority of participants, when they put more energy into the system, they burned up a good percentage of it. I think they burned up an average of 600 calories out of those 1,000 just through upregulating their need. So just like metabolic adaptation, when you put less energy in the system, you downregulate. The same thing happens when we put more energy into the system. But like I said, it's so variable person to person.
Yeah. So let's get into the application of it. So let's go into how you actually work this system, how you apply it to people, whether that's, the best way is probably by increasing NEAT here in terms while also increasing your food. So let's go into things to bring your NEAT up. I mean, it's pretty simple, but a lot of people actually don't do a lot of these things in terms of actually bringing their NEAT up, or they don't think about it. So let's get into some of the practical application behind this high flux state.
Absolutely. So the first thing that I look at, just because it's the easiest to track and really get a reading on and analysis on, is utilizing the lever of NEAT, because that is, like I said, that's the most influential aspect of our total daily energy expenditure. And we also see that between individuals of the same body size, the same body composition, sex, age, height, that people can, their differences in NEAT can vary by over 2,000 calories per day. So essentially, Anthony, we could have you burning 2,000 calories per day and living on 2,000 calories per day at your current body composition, or we can upregulate your NEAT and you could be that same body composition at 4,000 calories per day. And here's the thing, I'm all about in a life of abundance. I'd rather have 4,000 calorie Anthony than 2,000 calorie restricted Anthony. You know what I'm saying? So really, I try to pull that lever of NEAT, because not only is it the most modifiable, meaning it's the most within our control, but also it's the easiest to implement. So when I look to increase NEAT and get clients into a high energy flux state, my goal for them is to not see this as a burden or a reason to feel like they need to spend their lives in the gym, but rather our goal is to have them stay active, engage in enjoyable activities, and also decompress and relax during these things, as many forms of the physical activity that I have them incorporate help with this parasympathetic nervous activation, system activation that I spoke about before, because all these things are done at a low level of intensity. So like I said, the first thing I have them do, we're going to track your baseline steps. So I know where they're at, and I can meet them where they're at. And then from there, I start increasing calories along with steps through a variety of different methods and strategies. So for instance, with many of my clients, one of my top, suggestions or the things that I implement are taking post-meal walks. And that's because there's so many digestion benefits, so many blood glucose lowering benefits. We see that the elevations in insulin post-meal, when you take it just even a 10-minute walk, are, dramatically cut in half. So we see less area under the curve. You're less in a hyperinsulinemic state, which is hyperinsulinemia, or elevated insulin levels, are one of the key drivers to insulin resistance. So we really want to upregulate that GLUT4 translocation. We want to get, your muscles partitioning those nutrients better without needing insulin. Other things, I'm looking at lifestyle interventions. So I'll tell clients, park in the back of the lot and, further from destination. Simple things that you would do instead of parking at the top spot and driving around the parking lot looking for the best spot, just park in the back. It's going to not only keep your car safer, but also it's going to give you some extra steps. Go grocery shopping more often. Other things, I do this personally. I take a lap around the gym instead of sitting on my phone. I see so many people in the gym, they're sitting on the bench, and they're playing on their goddamn phone in between sets. And here's the thing, if you're really into hypertrophy, you need to take long rest periods. We're looking at 3 minutes. That's really what the research has shown. 3 minutes is better than one, as according to Schoenfeld. We see that longer rest periods are going to allow for less systemic fatigue, and you're going to be able to take those sets closer to failure and also accumulate more quality volume throughout the course of a set. So if you're already taking 3 minutes, take a lap or two around your gym. It's going to not only help with, getting your mind in a right state, because we see that as we move, we get better blood flow cerebrally. So you'll have better levels of BDNF, these brain-derived nootropic factors. You're going to have better endorphin levels, but also you're keeping a blood flow going. So you're able to recover better in between sets, and you're also accumulating steps. Like, honestly, my man, I get like 5,000 steps just in the gym.
Oh, I know. I remember I saw you. I remember. So me and Brandon were in the gym at Destination Dallas, and all I just keep seeing is him just like doing laps, like in between sets, like he do like two laps and then he go back and he start his set. I'm like, what is this guy doing?
I love it and I live it.
I was just like, this guy is either really smart, which he is, or he's psychopathic, which he might also be a little bit of.
You know what's funny? Whenever I sit on my phone, I get distracted. That's the first thing. I have ADD, so I'll be honest about that. But also, we have new recent literature that shows that you can actually induce mental fatigue from looking at your phone and especially social media during your workout. So with that, how do I get away from that? Well, I'm moving. It's keeping me distracted. I'm listening to a podcast or I'm listening to an audio tape. I honestly listen to a lot of educational stuff when I train because it keeps me from overexerting myself first and foremost. And lately I've been coming back from a surgery and I've been going through the rehabilitation process. So really it's been about not triggering. Like I used to listen to intense music really before my top sets. I need to kind of restrict that a little bit. I can't overactivate my sympathetic nervous system, but also from a time constraint, you know, I'm extremely busy. You know, I have a lot of clients and I have other businesses. And so I need to maximize my time. So I'm up early in the morning. I'm up at 3:30 a.m. every morning, but I train at around 5 a.m. And with that, I want to get as many steps out of the way as possible. So say I'm in the gym for 60 or 90 minutes. Am I going to waste? Think about it. When we really train, the reason that weight training doesn't expend that many calories, despite what people think, we actually see in literature, it's funny. We see in literature that the average weight training session, you burn 3 calories per minute. And people will think about that and say, I just did a 60-minute session. I only burned 180 calories. But think about it logically. Look at the work to rest ratio. Your set might take 30 seconds, but you just rested 3 minutes. So we're seeing, you know, a six time discrepancy. You know what I mean? You're resting for 6 times more than you're actually productively working for. And that's fine. But why not maximize that time? If you're already going to be in the gym and you want to maximize, you know, muscle gain by taking adequate rest, just get up and go for a lap, go take a walk, whatever it may be, but get out and stop sitting down and wasting your time. So that's one method. You know, I like having people take a walk during their lunch break. So maximize your time, go have a meal, and then also go for a walk. You're going to get digestion benefits. It's going to lower gas and bloating. I have a lot of parents and I have a lot of, clients that utilize a standing desk, or I have some that utilize a walking desk, which there's these treadmill desks. They're really not that.
Oh, much I know. Better. We have them in our office, like back
That's
like
incredible.
when we have offices like available, we actually are able to rent out treadmill desks to like, they have offices specifically with 2 treadmill desks in them and you can work in those. I fortunately have a standing desk. I'm sitting right now, but I also have a standing desk. So like every other hour I try to stand up. Because I remember this is after listening to you present at PUC that I started doing this, of course.
So honestly, we have research on that. And you know, what I really like people to do is if I have someone that's an office worker and it's really hard for them to get up and move, and it's just they're in an office, and I've been in an office, a corporate office as well. So I can totally relate. And a lot of times, you know, the people in your office structure, they're not understanding of what you're doing. But here's the thing. There's people that take a smoke break every hour, and there's other people that use the bathroom every hour. So what I tell them to do is to take a 5-minute walk break every hour. And what I have them do is they just set an alarm and then they pretend they go to the bathroom, but really they just go on a stroll. And here's the thing. We actually have research from Swartz that shows that taking a 5-minute walk every hour over the course of an 8-hour work done day will increase your calorie expenditure by 132 calories a day and 660 calories per week. So right there, you've just increased your energy expenditure. You've lost, you know, essentially, you know, 1/5 of a pound by just doing that. And it's something super easy that you can incorporate into your daily lifestyle. And then other things, you know, I consider me is gardening. It's going for, you know, taking your dog for a walk. Walk and talk meetings. I take most of my calls, you know, throughout the day on a walk. So I'm able to maximize. It also helps with just my cognition. Go for a walk with a podcast or an audio tape. Or dude, honestly, sometimes I record podcasts and I'm recording with other people. I'm walking. I have my headphones in. I'm walking while I'm talking to them because I just don't have that much time and I understand where people are coming from. So what I really tried to get across to people are, these are just all ideas. But what I really encourage clients to do is find forms of physical activity that they enjoy and consistently will do. So for me, when it's warm out, I love hiking. And then also when it's not, I take most of my calls, you know, my work-related calls, standing or walking around my house. And it's just something that I'm able to maximize my time, but still get those steps in and really increase that energy flux. And it's allowed me to maintain a lean, healthy, muscular physique for a long period of time. And honestly, it's something that really helped me because I wasn't able to train for almost 3 months. So when you saw me at the PC, I just got back in the gym. And so I'm significantly downsized. However, I'm still lean. I'm still in great shape. My blood work is all on point. And what we really see is there's immobility studies that show that when your knee drops down, not only do we see lowering of muscle because you're not active, so when your steps go down, but we also see lowered rates of muscle protein synthesis, which leads to more of that muscle loss. So if I didn't have the knee or I didn't have the habits in place that I have, you know, I could have lost more muscle than I did. And so it's all about just staying active, incorporating this into your lifestyle and realizing that this isn't something you have to do, but it's something that could highly benefit you.
Last question, because I'm very curious as to what you're, I'm nobody follow this. I'm assuming a lot of coaches are going to listen to this and how to apply this to people, but I just want to know, how many steps on average do you get per day?
So for me, and now I'm going to put a caveat into this. This is in the construct of my lifestyle.
Yes,
my
that's why I just said no one follow this. Yes.
I eat a very high amount of food. I'm usually averaging like 600 grams of carbs a day, and I stay quite lean. You guys can check out my Instagram page. Like I maintain a lean physique, but the reason I'm able to do that is because it's a part of my lifestyle, but I average around 15,000 steps per day. Okay. But here's the thing. Before I ever did, or when I first got into this energy flux lifestyle, my job was, I was a national sales director of a supplement company.
Yep.
But
yep.
I was always on the road. So I used to travel and visit clients. So I was going in and out of my car and visiting accounts all day, helping them set up display models of supplements. I was always on my feet. So like I said, when I went into the office, I dropped down to 6,000 steps per day. I all of a sudden started accumulating body fat, and I couldn't figure it out at first. I'm saying, I'm training really hard. I'm eating the same amount of calories. Andy, believe it or not, I used to maintain my body weight at that time. I was competing. I used to maintain just normal, I mean, under 8% body fat, honestly, at around 3,800 calories per day. So I was eating quite a amount of food. When I got into the office, listen to this, I kept eating 3,800 calories per day. I had to titrate my calories down to 28 to 2,900 just to stay at the same level of body composition, because that's how much of an impact that loss in meat had on me. So when I tell you guys, I've been through this scenario, I've seen the benefits, I've seen the drawbacks of not doing it, and realized I was at 6,000 steps per day. So now I was under even the threshold for metabolic health. So I was starting to see my blood glucose climb. I was seeing my resting heart rate climb. I was seeing my aerobic capacity. I was getting winded in between sets of the gym. So this is something that you titrate up. But just like I'm saying, I titrate up with clients, but I also didn't go from 6,000 back to 15,000. Because first and foremost, I had an office job now. I need to find out to incorporate it. So many of the methods that I'm sharing with you guys, 5-minute breaks, doing walk and talk meetings, those were things I've done myself when I was in an office. So these are all things that I've both seen and researched, but then I also have applied. And really it came from, I was applying these things years before any of this research came out. Much of the research that you heard me speak about on the in the presentation itself, it came out in 2018 and 2019. So I was doing this years before this, and it just served as validation, but it was nice that I was able to really understand and get a clinical perspective of the mechanisms behind the actions, because I was seeing it with hundreds of clients already. So what I like to say is, my goal with coaching and any education or content that I put out there is, my goal is to bridge the gap between information and research and application, because knowledge is nothing without the application. So you can have the best research in the world, but if you don't know how to properly apply it to people, it does you no good.
Yep. So my advice for a lot of people is don't just go upping your knee, like go like 1,000 steps at a time, like weekly, and build it to a point that's really sustainable. And I find that the one thing is, get consistent with your need. The things is that I see people, you know, we've probably both seen it where people go up and then they come down. Like if you're able to maintain a really big consistency with it, you're going to get the benefits. Whereas your, some days are up, some days you're back down. Like some days you're at like 3,000, some days you're at like 10,000. It doesn't, the body, and you're not giving the body the right response time to actually do it. So make sure when you're actually doing these things that you really stay consistent with it, because it's just going to age you and your body even better. But slowly bring up your steps over time. Just do these little habits that we talked about in here. I personally, for people's perspective, I work from home. I'm at this desk majority of the day. After every single meal, I will just do a 10-minute walk around my apartment real quick. In case I hear an email or something pop up, I'm able to answer it if I need to or something, but absolutely, I will take 10 minutes. And I swear to you, that's been a crucial part, is I'm now in a health phase. Fat loss phase. I've been in fat loss phase since January. And the more I do those walks, the leaner my physique ends up getting, and the better I actually feel mentally, physically, and just overall, just health wise. So if we're two examples of this, that it works, and we have studies that it works. So maybe you should just give it a go. These little habits can really add up in really making you leaner. And if you're overall able to be leaner, you're overall going to be able to push a little bit more food, which is, like we said, that's the one-two combo right there that you really want in your life.
100%. So just to wrap this up, guys, this isn't that you have to throw everything. You know, there's a lot of things in fitness. We take this extremist mindset. And what ends up happening is everything in our industry is really extreme. You're either dieting, you know, starving yourself and doing all the cardio, or you're off season, you're eating everything in sight, doing no cardio. It's like, let's take a moderate approach. Just add a few things. Take one or two of the pieces of advice that I laid out in this podcast and integrate it into your lifestyle this week and set a goal, have a checklist. I often do this with clients. Listen, I'm going to utilize, or I'm going to do a post-meal walk, two post-meal walks per day for 10 minutes for the next week. Let me see how that increases my need. Let me track that. Let me then, when I'm working with them, set a baseline minimum of steps for them to hit. And then maybe more of a aspirational goal. So I might set their baseline at 7,000, but their upper end goal is 8,500. We'll see where they fall in between that. And we titrate from there. But everything within fitness, within nutrition, within coaching, all about titrating and customizing to the individual and gauging biofeedback. And the biggest thing is, for any coaches out there that are going to utilize this, or for any clients as well that are utilizing this, track your biofeedback. You're going to notice that your sleep quality is better, especially if you're getting those morning walks. You're going to be able to have better sleep quality, but also a better ability to set up your sleep and wake cycles. You're also going to notice better mental health. You're going to notice better cognition. You're going to notice better aerobic fitness. You're going to better, you know, if you track blood glucose, which I have all my clients do, I see the fluctuations in their blood glucose coming down as we're titrating up steps. So it's, you know, there, it's great that there's all these physical benefits that you might feel, but it's also great when we can objectively see. So it's all, it's about what someone's seeing and feeling subjectively, as well as the improvements we're able to measure objectively.
Awesome. As a last point, Brandon, where can people find you if they want anything to ask you, any questions or anything like that? Just go lay it out, shout out anything that you want. And yeah, let's end it on that note.
Absolutely, my man. Well, first and foremost, I appreciate you having me back on, my man. It's always a pleasure, and it's been great to reconnect. For guys, if you guys have any questions, any inquiries, coaching, whatever it may be, feel free to reach out to me either on Instagram at @BrandonDeCruz_ or at my email, which is bdecruzfitness@gmail.com.
Awesome. So that's it for this episode, guys. If you guys enjoyed listening to Brandon and I talk about this topic, or even just discuss, we'll probably get him on again for another topic at some sort of point, most likely. But let's, you know, just go subscribe to the podcast, go give it a 5-star rating and follow, go leave a review. There's a 5-star now on Spotify that you can go, that you can also leave on Spotify. So it's great now because you can do ratings on there. Go follow Brandon. Go follow their podcast, like I said. And yeah, just keep staying tuned in to the podcast. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Ace of Spada podcast.